नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 52, Text 4. Badarayasramam, Badayasramam asadhyā Naranarayanalayam Sarvadvandvasahasantās Tapasaradayadharim Bhadayasramam asadhyā Naranarayanalayam Sarvadvandvasahashantās Tapasaradayadharim Bhadayasramam asadhyā Naranarayanalayam Sarvadvandvasahashantās Tapasaradayadharim Heritage Bhadrikashram Asadhyā Reaching Naranarayana Of the Supreme Lord's dual incarnation as Nara and Narayana Alayam, the residence, Sarva, all, Dvanva, dualities, Saha, tolerating, Shanta, peaceful, Tapasa, with severe austerities, Aradayat, he worshipped, Harim, Lord Krishna, Translation, there he arrived at Bhadrik Ashram, the abode of Lord Naranarayan, where remaining tolerant of all dualities, he peacefully worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari by performing severe austerities. So going on from what was described yesterday, that King Muchikunda, who had been sleeping for a long time and was rudely awoken by Kalayavana, gazed on him, and Kalayavana burnt to ashes. So after that, he had darshan of the Supreme Lord Krishna, and now we're reading that he's traveling north and traveling into the Himalayas. The Himalayas, especially the Kshatriyas, were especially fond of traveling to the Himalayas. The in the Varnashram system, where we have Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, and then your Brahmachari and Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, generally only the Brahmanas would accept the Sannyas order of life. The Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, they would accept Vanaprastha. Sudras, generally they would remain Grihastha. But the Kshatriyas would retire from family life, and they would like to go, traditionally the Kshatriyas would go to the Himalayas. That is a remote area in the mountains, and of course remote in comparison to the cities. We read yesterday that in the Himalayas there are very beautiful areas there of forests and flowers and hermitages, because many sages would go to the Himalaya and have a hermitage there. I was just listening to a lecture a while ago by Srila Prabhupada, where he said that at his time he said there was estimation that there's at least 4 or 5 million sadhus in India. They live in the holy places, and many, of course, like to live in the Himalaya. Now, of course, maybe it's more. the population has grown, but a lot of sadhus. So they're living in many different holy places. And Badrika Ashram, of course, is considered a very holy place. A very holy dham. In the north, you have Badrika Ashram is considered the holy dham of the north. In the south, you have Rameshwaram, considered the holy, the holy dham of the direction. The holy dham of the direction of the north is Badrika Ashram. Holy dham of the direction of the south is Rameshwaram. The holy dham of the direction of the east is Jagannath Puri. And in the west is Dwarka Dham. So these four holy dhams are considered the holy dhams of the directions. Badrika Ashram and Rameshwaram in the south, and Jagannath Puri and Dwarka Dham. I'm very fortunate to be able to visit all those places, those holy dhams. I just came from Dwarka Dham. Last time I was in India, we went to Dwarka Dham. Of course, many times I've been to Jagannath Puri, and a few times I've been to Rameshwaram, the place of Lord Ram, and where he crossed over to Sri Lanka. And Badrika Ashram also. I've been a few times. I remember the last time I went with Bhakta Devi, who just walked in, come to the Bhagavatam class. I took and dragged him up to Badrika Ashram to get purified. So we went there, and and that is a very holy place, Badrinarayan. Naranarayan, there's a deity there. Nara and Narayan, there's Arjuna and Krishna. Nara and Narayan. He's called Badrinarayan because he, both of the lords sat under a Badri tree. Badri, it's like kind of a plum tree or something like that. Badri tree. So they were meditating, they did their austerities, their tapasya. Naranarayan did their tapasya under the Badri tree. So they are known as Badrinarayan. And then, of course, later there was made a temple. There was a deity of Naranarayan there. Not so big deity, small deity. A little hard to see. I have a bit dark with the candle on there. But anyway, very holy. For thousands and thousands and thousands of years, this has been a holy place. And in the Himalaya, many places, Kailash, and Kedrinath, and Jamunotri, and Gangotri. So on and so forth. Many holy places in the Himalayas. Jyotimath also, just a last town before Badrika Ashram, there's that famous temple there. There's a nice, beautiful temple of Lord Nrisimha, the Nrisimha deity there. So it is a track. Before there wasn't any road there. Now, later on, in the years after, the military have put the road in, actually, because it's a sensitive area between on the border of China there. So there was no road. So when the ancient kings would go to Badrika Ashram and walk, and they would like, they have to, you know, you go in the hills and you have to know the pathway there. And sometimes it wasn't so easy. And then you can go higher from Badrika Ashram to the place of the Vyasadeva. There they have the cave of Vyasadeva near Badrika Ashram, just about 4 kilometers. But actually, in the Mahabharata, it's described that there's Vyasadeva has his cave. He's still living there. Actually, higher than the cave that is there. When you go to the cave of Vyasadeva, nearby is the cave of Ganesh. I don't remember, you may remember the cave of Ganesh, the deity of Ganesh inside. And then he was writing all what Vyasadeva was speaking. And then you go in the cave of Vyasadeva, and then there was a few deities of Vyasadeva there, actually. A big one and a couple of other ones as well. So there he lived in the cave and was dictating. A very holy place. The Pandavas went that way. When they retired from the kingdom, from Hastinapur, it was a favorite place of the kings who retired from the Delhi, from Hastinapur. They went there. There's one, Bhimkund. Bhimkund there, where you go up. you can go to Bhimkund where there's one kund he made there, and he lifted one. Madhvacharya went also up there. so many great saints, sadhus, went to Badrikashram. So King Muchikunda also went to Badrikashram. Amazing place, actually. There's the hot springs there. You have the Ganga rushing down, freezing up there because you're in the Himalayas. But still people go for the dip. And then nearby is Narada, what is that one? Narada Kund. Narada?
Where the big
hot spring
is.
Narada, it's called Narada Kund or something. One of the springs is hot spring. There's another one. If you go early in the morning, you can go in. If you go later in the day, it's a lot hotter. I remember I went there. But the time before I went in, I was it was really funny. It's a funny thing happened to me that I was just leaning over to see how hot it was. And there, the military are there because they have a base nearby, and they were washing their clothes. As I was leaning in, somehow or other I fell in. I don't know what happened. Yeah, I fell in. I had all my clothes on and everything. I just fell in. All the soldiers were laughing. I got out pretty fast. It was pretty hot. So I fell in with all my clothes on. They were just laughing. But anyway, I went in. Forced. Maybe I was thinking not to go in, but Krishna had other ideas. Pushed me in. So now, King Muchikunda, he went there and practiced austerities. The idea is to, cultivate spiritual life, not to go to these holy places and just go like a tourist or something like that, just sightseeing. You go there, just the devotees go there, we're chanting, seeing the deity. There are many who go to these places and just for sightseeing, and they don't imbue the spiritual nature of the holy place. Unfortunately, now in India, the holy places are many unscrupulous men are turning them into tourist destinations, holiday resorts. Indeed, on the way up to Badrikashram, you can go to the side and there's one big ski resort advertised in the Himalayas. You've got the chairlifts. Got chairlifts and you can go skiing down the slopes. Yeah, just at Jyotimant. Remember, you just go to Jyotimant and there's a big advertisement there. Go to the ski resort. So, the Himalayas. Traditionally, the place of practice, the sages would go for thousands of years. And unfortunately, it's become like that in most of the holy places in India. The people know that pilgrims go there, so they want to build their hotels. When they build their hotels, then they introduce the liquor, the meat eating, and prostitution also comes with that. So it's unfortunately, just like Jagannath Puri now, in India, it's known as almost like the honeymoon destination of India. You go to Jagannath Puri for your honeymoon. But really Jagannath Puri is there to go to worship Lord Jagannath, practice tapasya, but now they're ruining it. With all these Kali Yuga, the effect of the Kali Yuga, the people are going there. Now in Rishikesh, I know, in Haridwar also, the sages got together and banned the hotels. They did no meat here. You cannot bring the hotel here and serve the meat, or serve the liquor. Banned. So the hotel people, being very attached and making money off that, they challenged it in the court. They made the ban. The sages got with the council and they made the ban, and then there was challenged in the court. But luckily, it was defeated. Defeated in the court. So now, you're at Haridwar, no meat, no alcohol, nothing. They're very strict there. Now you see also, no eggs, no onion, garlic, nothing. Here, it doesn't, in the ashrams, you're not allowed. Many tourists go there, but not allowed. So it's good. These places are meant for tapasya, austerity, meditation, the spiritual path, not for material sense gratification. But now it's becoming like that. Of course, there's nothing wrong with hotel. You have to have some place to stay. But, when they introduce all these other things. But we see King Muchikunda was not like that at all. He was a tolerant of all dualities. Now, yesterday we were saying, of course, Badrikashram is in the Himalayas. Most of the year it's snowing, snowed out. So he stayed there. in the snow. So he tolerated the duality. Duality means it's very hot, very cold. So he tolerated that. And you can do the yogis, of course, they keep themselves warm by practicing yoga, pranayama, and exercise, and also they you see sometimes they cover themselves with the ash. They know how to keep themselves warm. But anyway, even if it's cold, they tolerate it. They're able to live there, tolerating the cold and tolerating whatever else. So you have to tolerate dualities. Matra spashta kuntaya sitoshna sukadukana. Is that Krishna says, titikshishva, you have to tolerate. And then practicing your spiritual life. So he was performing severe austerity. Severe, or I don't know exactly what the austerities were, not stated here exactly. But generally they don't. They take vows, and maybe only to eat berries or all sorts of things. Not wear clothes. Sometimes they go naked. No shoes. Walk around. Not so, it may not sound like much, but no shoes. Just to walk around with no shoes, it's not so easy. It's like we go in the parikram in Mayapur or in Vrindavan, you wear no shoes. So you have to walk around rocks and things like that. It's not easy. It doesn't sound much, but when you do it day after day. So they got no shoes, and they don't eat. Perhaps they don't eat. The yogis, of course, sometimes they would purposely, in the middle of summer, they would surround themselves, they would sit and make fires all around them, just to become detached. In the middle of summer in India, like right now in India, it's really hot. I'd imagine it's hot already, and then you sit in the middle and you make fires all around you as well. And in the middle of winter when it's really cold, they go in the river, in the freezing snow or something like that, to be detached. They purpose, especially this is a Jada Yoga, they do like that. Jada Yoga means maybe sometimes they even inflict pain on themselves just to be free, to be detached from it. Pull out the hair. So I don't know exactly Muchikunda, what austerities. Of course, devotees, we don't practice. It's not impractical. If we told people, okay, you have to join the Krishna consciousness movement now and you have to practice all severe austerities, they have to start pulling out your hairs one by one. Go naked down Swanson Street. No clothes. In the middle of winter. You can't do it. People don't appreciate these things. So therefore, it's not impractical. No one can. Even if someone wanted to do it, who could actually follow it? So our austerity is Sankirtan Yajna, the austerity of the Krishna consciousness movement. Chanting Hare Krishna, spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, that is our tapasya. Takes some effort, takes some austerity, takes tolerance. And then the acharyas and Srila Prabhupada told, yes. Sankirtani, this is the yagya, this is the sacrifice, this is the tapasya. You yourself follow, and you give to the others, this is tapasya. Don't worry about other things. This is sufficient. And this tapasya is blissful. Anandam buddhivan. Very blissful tapasya. You're going out, chanting, distributing books, preaching Krishna, very blissful. Of course, for those who are materially inclined, it's not very blissful. It seems like a great tapasya, great austerity. It's like I was listening to a lecture at Prabhupada in Los Angeles. He was saying, just like this Krishna consciousness movement, it's so nice. He said, we are chanting Hare Krishna, so blissful. We're eating nice prasadam. We are associating with nice devotees. We have a nice place to live. So nice. All the devotees, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya. Then he stopped and he said, but still you cannot do it. Like that. Still, you cannot do it. This is due to our the disease of material consciousness. Mode of passion. Yadagre chanamanducha. Yat. No, what is that? Yadagre chanamanducha. Sukamona. there's one verse, what is like a nectar in the beginning but poison in the end. And then the yada, sottam chakshu, pardon.
Forget that verse.
Anyway, it'll come to me in a minute, but one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, the beginning is like poison. I'm trying to think of it. You know, the activity is like poison in the beginning, but in the end it's like nectar. So why is it like poison in the beginning? Yeah, due to our material conditioning. It's like poison doing these things. But in the end, oh, nectar. You just can follow it. Of course, some people, when they come, they live very pious lives. Immediately it's like nectar. Immediately. But generally, materially inclined. Bhagavan Puna Avrajya Mpurim Yavana Veshtitam Hatvam Lecha Balam Ninye Tadiyam Bharakam Danam. The Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by the Yavanas. Then he destroyed the army of barbarians and began taking their valuables to Dwarka. Purport. It is clear from this verse that Kaliyavana alone pursued Lord Krishna into the mountain cave. When Krishna returned to the besieged city of Mathura, he eliminated the vast barbarian army. Now, we remember that Krishna left Vrindavan and went to the city of Mathura. And there he killed that demoniac king Kamsa, who had been terrorizing wanted to kill Krishna. He killed Kamsa. And he lived there. Krishna lived there in Mathura for many years. After some time, Jarasandha came and attacked Mathura. Why? Because he was very angry at Krishna. Because he had previously, actually, Jarasandha had wanted to conquer Mathura. He came there just on the other side of the Yamuna with a big, vast army. He had that big elephant, Kuvalayapida, that he had captured after great endeavor. That elephant, there's a whole history to that elephant in his former life. Who was he in his former life? Forget that. One resident of the higher planets who was cursed by his guru, that because he was acting in such a manner. Boorish manner, that he had to take birth as an elephant. And he took birth as an elephant, but very strong elephant. And Jarasandha had heard about this this elephant and went to capture him. It took so many soldiers to capture this one elephant, like huge elephant. So they captured him. And so Jarasandha came with his army and elephant to conquer over Mathura. He'd been conquering. At that time, Kamsa was there. Kamsa had a big festival on, with tents and everything like that. And this was on the other side of the Yamuna. And so Jarasandha was on one side. So at night, this Kulayapida broke free from his chains. They had chained him up. So he broke free from the chains and just ran amok. And was just tossing everyone left, right and centre. And stomping on them. And he ran right across to the other side. Went over the Yamuna. Through the Yamuna. And went right over there, running on the other side. And throwing people and trampling people. Then Kamsa, he saw him. Kamsa was very powerful also. He grabbed him. Threw him down. Threw the elephant down. Kamsa was so big and powerful. This elephant was very powerful. But Kamsa was so much more powerful. He got him and he threw him down. Picked him up, twirled him, and threw him back right across the other side of the Yamuna and landed right in front of the feet of Jarasandha. So this was Jarasandha's prize elephant he was going to use to conquer over Kamsa. You know, along with the army. All of a sudden, the elephant was thrown right at his feet by Kamsa. So Jarasandha thought, no way, I'm going to attack Kamsa now. Look what he just did to my elephant. So therefore, he thought, better make an alliance with him. Rather than try to fight him, make an alliance. So, make an alliance. He thought, well, I'll go there offering him gifts and things like that and try to talk with him, make an alliance. Offered his daughters in marriage to him. had two daughters, Asti and Prapti. And he said, oh, please, I want to make an alliance, please marry my daughters. We can have our kingdoms, our dynasties can be united in that way. So Kamsa married Asti and Prapti. So of course then when Kamsa was killed by Krishna, Asti and Prapti became widows. So the father, Jarasandha, was very unhappy, he was very angry. Who is this Krishna killing Jarasandha? Now my daughters have no husband. He's killed the king. Very angry. He came with a huge army, Akshahinis, soldiers and horses, and attacked Mathura. Krishna and Balaram were by that time already living there. And they came out and drove him away. Drove him and his army away. So 17 times Jarasandha attacked Mathura. Talk about never say die type of mentality. 17 times. Each time defeated. Went back. Tail between his legs type of attitude, you know. Head hung. And actually I remember reading that he came back, even after the first time, he said, oh, I'm going to retire, renounce the throne, became very depressed. Then all his ministers and everyone talked him into, no, you should stay on, just gather an army again, attack again. They all convinced him. Sorry, 17 times, and that was this 18th time, I think, if my memory serves me correctly. 18th time he was attacking again. Simultaneously, that's seeming out of coincidence, Kalayavana, the king of the Yavanas, who decided to also attack Mathura. So Krishna and Balaram, of course, they are the supreme personality of Godhead. They can just by their desire, and these demons can be vanquished. But they are playing a leela in the world, just like the human beings. They were thinking, the citizens of Mathura, they're too much harassed by this constant attacking of these armies of Jarasandha. Now that Kalayavana has come, so they had arranged, actually, it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when one night when the residents of Mathura went to sleep and they woke up the next morning, all of a sudden they were in Dwarkadal. Krishna had made a city floating in the sea, created a whole city floating in the sea. And there he made many palaces, many residences, a beautiful city. And by his mystic power, the residents of Mathura, when they slept at night, next morning they woke up, they're in Dwarka. They woke up, what was this? Many beautiful houses. So then the lords came out, and they saw Kalayavana came. They didn't have any weapons. Krishna ran off. And Kalayavana pursued him. We were just reading about this, how he went into the cave. Kalayavana was killed by Muchikunda. So Krishna is coming back again to Mathura. The army of Kalayavana was still there. So Krishna came back, and here it is said, he destroyed that army. It was attacking the city of Mathura, the army of the barbarians. The barbarian is like an uncultured, uncivilized type of people, generally. I think when someone says someone is a barbarian, sometimes we even say, oh, you're a barbarian, you're an animal. You're an animal. Barbarian. Barbarian means no principles, uncultured. These are Yavanas. They were considered like that. Mletchers and Yavanas proper used to call us. We used to call us Mletchers. You are Mletchers. And I remember Hari Suri tells the story of here when Prabhupada was here. Hari Suri was serving the lunch, bringing in the lunch, and he brought in the salt. But when he was bringing in, his finger went into the salt container. Was a bowl of salt, and as he's talking, his finger went in there. Prabhupada was just looking at him. So Prabhupada, when you serve Prabhupada lunch, everything had to be hard, had to be straight away. So Hari Suri was thinking, Prabhupada always likes to have salt and pepper and everything right immediately. And well, he thought that, oh, I put my finger in, that's made it all, made the salt moochy. But then what will I do? Will I inconvenience Prabhupada by just going again to get some more salt and making him wait? And so he thought, oh, I'll just give it to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada just looking the whole time, he put it down the table. He said, "You are Mlecha." You are putting your finger in the salt and you are offering it. This is now contaminated. Bring some new salt. The Prabhupada from time to time call us Mlechas and Jhanas. Uncultured, not trained. Vedic culture, even in cleanliness. People, they don't know. They just, even in their eating habits, society thinks this are so cultured. They just don't wash themselves, even though they go to the bathroom, they don't wash themselves. Right? It's something like when I come in the airport sometimes, I go to the bathroom, there's so many people I see, they just go in and they don't even wash their hands, they don't do anything. Right? So moochy. They don't wash their hands, they open the door like that, and that much disease is transmitted like that. So even in fact, Prabhupada actually said in the Kali Yuga, to be clean will be a revolution. People will think you're crazy. How many baths do you take? 2 baths a day? Look at you. 2 baths a day? If you have 1 bath in a week, some countries if they have 1 bath in a week, that's considered good. Right? And Prabhupada said as the Kali Yuga goes on, cleanliness of the district. Already we're seeing with the water, maybe we won't be able to have a bath. Right? Up in Brisbane I think down here there's stage 3 restrictions. Right? Stage 4 now, okay. Up in Brisbane, stage 5. And if they don't get a decent rain up there now, who has heard of Brisbane and the Gold Coast? That area, they normally have floods up there. Dry. Normally it's so wet. Flooding area. Too much water. Now it's that for the last 4 or 5 years ago. So they're on stage 5. By October, they said they don't get good rain. They go on stage 6. So stage 6. Stage 5 already, you can't wash your car. You can't, even to wash your windscreen. You can only, wash your windscreen with bucket water or something like that. And showers. Just keep your showers to 2 minutes. One person was writing. I read an article. One person was writing that they had friends over and they were out in the country a bit, and they had their own water, and their friends wanted to take a shower, and they're telling, "Oh, do you really have to have a shower?" So maybe by force of circumstance, they won't be able to have a bath. So cleanliness will be revolutionary, but even cleanliness is part of the Vedic culture. But these are yavanas; they're uncultured barbarians. He destroyed the army of barbarians. Eliminated. Just himself. Doesn't say anything. Anyone else was there. The Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by yavanas. He destroyed the army of the barbarians. He. Krishna did. The whole army. But he didn't have to even come back to Mathura to do that. Krishna can do anything. Of course, when Krishna kills someone, they are liberated. Bhishma was praying, in the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna came running towards him. He said, "Oh, Krishna's coming! Yes, kill me, and they'll be liberated." But Krishna doesn't kill just anyone. Material energy is already doing that, so he doesn't need to bother about that type of thing. But Krishna kills actually those who are very fortunate. Many of the demons, all the demons Krishna killed there are actually his devotees, playing a part also. So he himself destroyed the army of the barbarians. The vast barbarian army. No, it wasn't just 1,000 or 10,000. The vast barbarian army. He went there and he killed them all. So someone says, "Oh, Krishna is just an ordinary person." Right. Just like I read in one encyclopedia, one so-called professor said, "Oh yes, Krishna was a historical person, the leader of a tribe in northern India." So who is this ignoramus type person? I said, writing like that. So Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality. Lord Balaram is the Supreme Personality. There's no problem. Whole vast armies. All the armies of the world can come. Still, it wouldn't be a problem in Krishna. So, Niyamane dani gobin libis chachuta chodita ajagama jarasandas trayo vimsatyanikapa. As the wealth was being carried away by oxen and men under Lord Krishna's direction, Jarasandha appeared at the head of the 23 armies. O king, seeing the fierce waves of the enemy's army, two manavas, imitating human behavior, ran swiftly away. Abandoning the abundant riches, fearless but feigning fear, they went many yojanas on their lotus-like feet. And Krishna is famous for this. What is his name? Rancho. There's a famous temple in India. Anyone been there? You've been there, right? What is that temple at? Which place? Dhaka, the famous temple. I just went there. You just went there. Famous temple of Lord Krishna. He is known as Rancho, one who ran away from the battlefield. They are worshipping him like that. They are worshipping. Normally, a Kshatriya runs away from the battlefield. Oh, he's a coward. You know, call him a coward. I laugh at him. It was like Arjuna. He wanted to not fight in the battle of Kurukshetra and go to the forest and do yoga. And Krishna said, you can't do that. You're a Kshatriya, you're a warrior. Yeah, you know, what are they all laugh. Look at him, he's a coward, he's afraid. And indeed, Jarasandha, when he saw Krishna and Balaram, now, he's so foolish, Jarasandha. Here, Krishna just came back and he wiped out the whole barbarian army just by himself. Right? And then Jarasandha comes and Krishna runs away. You know, Jarasandha must have seen all the dead bodies everywhere. Right? And then Krishna's running away. Oh, he's a coward, he's afraid of me, right? Such is the mentality of demons, asuras. They're so puffed up. Yeah, there was one story of who was it? Ravana also. Ravana was going around the universe and threatening everyone and challenging everyone to a fight and fighting and defeating them. Then he went down, he heard that Yamaraj would be good to fight, so he went down to the southern area of the universe and challenged Yamaraj. When he came there with his Rakshasas, the Yamadutas all of a sudden came there and fought, killed the Rakshasas, killed them all. And just jumped all over the chariot of Ravana, covered the chariot, so many Yamadutas, they just covered. And they went inside, just about to kill Ravana. Ravana just fortunately had one weapon from Lord Shiva that he got from being benedicted by Lord Shiva. He used that weapon and killed all the Yamadutas.
Pashupati.
Yeah. Pashupati. That weapon, Pashupati. And then he killed all them. Then Yamaraj came himself and was fighting with Ravana and defeating him. The next moment, Yamaraj was going to kill Ravana, but then a voice from the skies came. Don't kill him. You are not meant to kill him. He is meant to be killed by Lord Rama. So then Yamaraj heard that. And then he made himself invisible and left. So Ravana also, ah, ha, ha, he laughed. He's afraid. He's afraid. So this is the mentality of the less intelligent, foolish asuras. Prabhupada would call them demons. That's a certain way of saying it. Demons. The asuras. They're foolish. They're so foolish. Even they're being defeated in so many ways. Still they're puffed up. Yeah. It's like in sometimes, you know, in the schoolyard, the boys are wrestling or fighting with each other, and one boy is being defeated, beaten. Then the other one walks away, has to do something else. And then the other one from before jumps up. Ah, you're running away. Foolish, right? So puffed up. Even being beaten down. So, Dambo dapo bimana shakura parasam evacha agyanam chapichasasa pata samadam asurim. These qualities of the asura, the demons, they're all arrogant, cocky, you know, always want to insult people, attack people all the time, always jealous and envious. Here it is mentioned. Atithetha. When he saw them fleecing, powerful Jarasandha laughed loudly, then pursued them with charioteers and foot soldiers. He could not understand the exalted positions of the two lords. Apparently exhausted after fleeing a long distance, the two lords climbed a high mountain named the Pravashana, upon which Lord Indra showers incessant rain. Giro nili no agyaya narigamya param nripa dadaha girim erubi samantar agnim utsrijan. Although he knew they were hiding on the mountain, Jarasandha could find no trace of them. Therefore, O king, he placed firewood on all sides and set the mountain ablaze. Purport. Clearly, we are observing one of the Supreme Lord's transcendental pastimes. Although the Bhagavatam states that the two lords, Krishna and Balaram, were exhausted, even in their so-called exhausted state, they were able to quickly climb a high mountain, shortly thereafter jump off it on the other side to the ground. It would be unwise and illogical to ignore the whole picture the sages are giving us here and instead try to pick apart isolated descriptions. Clearly, we are watching the Supreme Personality of God in the midst of his spiritual pastimes. We are not observing an ordinary human being. Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were all still quite young men when this pastime took place. One can easily see in these descriptions how they must have been enjoying themselves, eagerly fleeing from the somewhat ridiculous King Jarasandha, racing up a mountain, jumping off and totally befuddling the constantly failing demon, who somehow or other never lost confidence in himself. Seen without envy or quarrelsomeness, the Lord's pastimes are immensely entertaining. The Lord Krishna is just having a little bit of fun. He's running away. and he's just like he's playing. He's playing with Jarasandha. Jarasandha sets fire to the whole mountain. Right? This is a high mountain. Krishna and Balaram just jump off the other side. And then they go to Dwarka. So they allow Jarasandha to think, oh, now they are dead. But of course, later on, Krishna and Arjuna and Bhimsen go to the kingdom of Jarasandha, and it is Bhimsen later who kills Jarasandha. See, it may have been Krishna's plan all along that he didn't want to personally kill Jarasandha. I'm sure there's a story that describes the reasons why, one of the Puranas. Maybe Jarasandha was destined to be killed by Bhimsen, just like Ravana was not destined to be killed by Yamaraj. He was destined to be killed by Lord Rama. Perhaps that Krishna, it was Bhima who was destined to kill Jarasandha. So therefore, he refrained. I mean, Krishna could have killed Jarasandha on the first attack. I mentioned earlier that Jarasandha attacked Mathura 18. This was his 18th time. The 17th time Krishna repelled him. His army, killed so many soldiers. He went back, defeated, broken man. He could have killed him so many times before, but he didn't. So it must have been that he was waiting for Bhimsena later to come and kill him. So he let Jarasandha think, oh, now he is dead. No one could survive. He set fire to the whole mountain. He didn't come down. We're waiting down the bottom here. Smoke him out, fire him out. When the hunter sometimes goes in the forest to hunt animals, quite often they would do like that. They would set the jungle ablaze in India in the former times when the Maharajas or even in the British times when they would go hunting the tiger. They would set an area ablaze and then the tiger would run in there, but they'd have the army waiting on the other side, or they'd have their soldiers waiting on the other side. When the lion, or rather the tiger come running out, frightened from the fire, they would capture him like that. One of the ways they would capture the tigers. So Jarasandha set fire. He thought, well, we'll smoke him, we'll fire him out. Krishna will have to come down. When he comes down, we'll get him and we'll kill him. But he didn't come. Krishna Balaram didn't come. So Jarasandha, oh, they must be dead. They died in the fire. They died in the fire. But no, Krishna just jumped up. Now, how you could escape a fire? It's raging up the hill. Have you ever been in a bush? Have anyone been in a bushfire? These big bushfires. I was up there in Canberra that time when that fire came raging through, and Adi Purush myself when driving around. I tell you what, when the wind comes through and that you get surrounded by that, there's no way out. Very hot, and the embers, amazing. So when you get surrounded, there's nowhere. So how Krishna, he must have jumped over the fire. Who can do that? Ordinary person can do something like that? Not possible. Jump off a mountain, stay alive. But he just jumped off. It was nothing. He was having some, and he is celebrated as ranch or running away. He's worshipped by those who are his devotees, just like Gopal Prabhu, Gopal Guru, and I went to visit that temple in Dhaka. He's worshipped by his devotees. They're not thinking, oh, he's a coward. If he was a coward, why they would be throwing stones? He's a coward. Not they were worshipping. Because his devotees and the intelligent people know that Krishna, whatever he does, is the Supreme Personality of God. Only the less intelligent fools, the mudhas, think that he is ordinary. So here, in his purport, Haridananda Maharaj explains, it would be foolish, illogical, to assume that Krishna and Balaram are ordinary persons. After hearing all this, and saying that Krishna and Balaram are ordinary, they must want to say like that in the face of so many extraordinary incidents in the life of Krishna Balaram. When someone really wants, doesn't matter what anyone else says, they'll just say or do it. You can offer all sorts of logic and argument, but if they really want it, doesn't matter what anyone says. This type of illogical stubbornness is really a symptom of the mode of ignorance. It's a totally irrational mode of ignorance and mode of passion, especially. This stubborn arrogance and irrational. So in the face, I remember I was on a plane. I had some prasad on the devotees' gate. I was taking prasad, and the lady next door in the next seat, she was having her meal, and then she looked up. Oh, vegetarian, is it? Yeah, and I was describing that. Why are you vegetarian? Asking more questions. I'll explain. And she was agreeing with everything. But in the end, she said, but I couldn't give up on meat. After all that. She was agreeing. Everything I said, she agreed with. You know, on the health aspect, on this aspect, on the, mercy aspect. She agreed. She could see it. She agreed. There wasn't one argument from her. Every point, she agreed. But in the end, but I couldn't give up. A totally illogical, irrational. It's so attached to wanting to, because they want to do a thing. When someone really super attached, now when someone is super attached, it's really a symptom of the mode of passion. Lobha property, great attachment. Lobha property, adama, kaman asamasma, karma. This intense attachment is a symptom of the mode of passion. When attached in the face of, so much suffering or argument or still attached. Very foolish. So here it just explains, unwise, illogical to ignore what Krishna has done with Kali Yavana and the barbarian army and jumping off the mountain. Still, Jarasandha, he is number one asura. He is thinking, oh, Krishna is dead. He is an ordinary person. He is, even though he's been defeated 17 times before, he's laughing. Ah, he's a coward. Isn't it? Yeah. What is it? Jarasandha laughed loudly. He laughed very loudly. Arrogance. When someone is very, very arrogant, then they do like that. They laugh. You're a fool. So, anyway, we can understand. What is the position of Krishna? And as is said here, the Lord's pastimes are immensely entertaining. He is enjoying, and for the devotees, they are enjoying hearing about these pastimes. We relish. Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Devotees relish to hear about these pastimes. They want more. Want to hear more. It's like amrita, nectar. What else? Krishna, when he comes to the world, he engages in. Not only is when he comes as in his original form as Krishna, so many incarnations. We were just reading about Lord Varaha in think in Sydney we were reading about Lord Varaha, that amazing pastime, how the Lord grew so huge, came out of the nostril of Lord Brahma, small, and then grow huge, so huge, bigger than the earth, picked up the earth on his tusks. The Lord grew bigger than the whole earth. He was so huge. Lord Brahma was looking at him, and all of a sudden he grew and grew and grew and grew. Now Lord Brahma himself is huge, but he grew bigger and bigger, 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 bigger. Seemed to cover the whole universe. So who is that ordinary person? The Lord has so many pastimes, so many leaders, and those who are fortunate are able to hear about them, and those who are more fortunate relish them, enjoy them. Immensely entertaining. Krishna himself enjoys, and we also enjoy hearing about these pastimes. All right, does anyone have any question or comment?
I heard Krishna ran away from battle.
Mm. You heard that?
Lecture, heard. Mm-hmm.
You heard that?
Yeah, he ran away from battle.
We just read it. You heard about it, didn't you? Anyway, sorry. Just take, I'm making a joke with this.
The reason why he ran off his battle, I heard, was because he wanted to attend Rukmini's lecture. How far is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's coming up, we'll read about it. Later on, when he went to Dwarka, one Brahmana came with a letter of Rukmini. You know, of course, Krishna knows everything. Maybe he knew that letter was coming and he wanted to get up there pretty fast and get it. is that what you're saying? We'll read about that in the next few verses.
It's interesting now with this drought that Howard's now saying that we've done everything in our power, he's passing it back to God.
Sorry, say again?
We've done everything, our government's done everything in its power to stop this drought. Now he's passing it back to God and saying, well, it's his fault now. You've got to send him about it, you've got to pray.
yeah, exactly. Of course, when it comes like this up there in Queensland, the Queensland Premier Vidi, he was saying that maybe we should pray to God. Did he? Pray for rain. Yeah, well, he's asked him to pray, and if it doesn't come, it's God's fault now. It's not his fault. Just maybe he's trying to pass the buck. It's God is withholding it from you. that's what's going on. Pray to God for rain. Now, you have to understand God is not sending it. And why is he not sending it? That you have to try to understand. That should be more your concern. Don't think God is some other reason why there's no rain. If God is withholding it through his agents in the material world. He's withholding. And actually, there's that verse in Bhagavad Gita, I send and withhold the rain. Was that verse? Yeah. So the Krishna tells like that. So he's withholding. So they should be asking why. And what can we do? As I said yesterday, God's natural arrangement is that water is preserved in the ocean with salt. Prabhupada gave a lecture, I was hearing the other week. He said, by nature's way, by God's arrangement, water is preserved in the ocean with salt. The sun evaporates that water and forms cloud. The wind comes, blows the cloud back over the land, and the water comes. Now, the materialists are trying to imitate that by making these desalination plants and all, which does exactly the same thing. Take the salt out of the water, but they can only do it in a very limited, small way, and it costs so much money. Easier just to find out how to rectify things and let nature provide the water as traditionally it does, under the auspices of the Supreme Personality of God. So that God is Krishna's withholding. Of course, we're always chanting, we're always doing the Sankirtan Yajna. We have to increase the Sankirtan Yajna. We don't like to see anyone suffer. But of course, if Krishna desires, and maybe it's meant to be like that. But still, the devotees will always do the Sankirtan Yajna. Any other question? All goes to the Prabhupada Ki.